Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Five Rings to Rule Them All. I'm Sid Ziegler. Despite my Olympic fandom and my fandom for Olympians and how much inspiration I've drawn from them for so much of my life, I'm always interested in talking to people who absolutely hate the Olympics, who think the Olympics are bad for the world, bad for society. And this past Pride Month, I came across a group called Nolympics. They literally want to abolish the Olympics. They think the Olympics are bad for the world, bad for society, bad for local communities. And they have a point. I've talked to Dave Zirin, sports writer, for years about this. He's written books and articles about it. There are issues with policing and displacement of people and the financial burden on the local community of having hosting the Olympics. And so I wanted to have a couple people from Nolympics on this week to talk about where what they're doing, what their position is. And so I'm joined by Gigi Droche and Gia Lappi, who talk about those issues and also the LGBTQ perspective. The Nolympics says that the Olympics are literally, specifically, and actively dangerous for LGBTQ people. And they explain why, they give an example, and we have a good back and forth about the positives and negatives of the Olympics. And it was a really great conversation, just hearing different perspectives and having a really respectful, honest conversation about it, and also sharing our absolute hatred for the role of Mayor Eric Garcetti in Los Angeles. The Gigi and Gia live in Los Angeles, and they were drawn to this movement because LA is hosting the Olympics in 2028. Anyhow, here's my conversation with Gigi and Gia, and I hope you get as much out of it as I did.
Well, usually I start these with, I'm here with so-and-so and so-and-so, and we are all three actually in the same city this time. I don't think this ever happened. Gigi and Gia from Nolympics. Just kind of give me an idea of how the group got started and who is the group?
Well, we originally started a few years ago from the DSA LA's Housing and Homelessness Subcommittee. It started when a lot of activists here in Los Angeles realized that our city council and our mayor, Eric Garcetti, were making a bid for the Olympics. And when they were looking into the issues, they realized that that bringing the Olympics to Los Angeles will accelerate our housing crisis, and it'll accelerate police militarization, which will disproportionately affect Black and Brown communities and working class communities. And so the group in DSA LA decided that they needed a organization specifically to target the Olympics, and it started off trying to keep the Olympics from coming to Los Angeles, and it's now morphed into keeping the Olympics from happening, not just in Los Angeles, but abolishing the Olympics worldwide. Because every city that the Olympics come to, these issues actually happen. Every city that the Olympics come to, it accelerates police militarization, and it accelerates displacement of the most vulnerable in a city.
It's the dirty little secret, and there's a guy I'm sure you know named Dave Zirin, who is a wonderful colleague. I've worked with him tangentially for years, and he has talked about this stuff, about not just the Olympics, but also the Super Bowl, how you know, funds get diverted toward this multi-billion dollar event and away from important services. So, right, give me an idea, like, who is this organization right now, and what impact have you been able to measure so far?
So we're really a group of just normal organizers, activists around Los Angeles. We've had some people accuse us of being like paid when we've called into city council. We're all volunteer. We're just basically a group of Angelenos who really don't want the Olympics in our city, and we don't want it in any city because we know that it's not going to benefit our city in any way. Really, like, the dirty secret that I think that people don't talk about with the Olympics is that it's not a side effect that the Olympics will come in and accelerate policing and accelerate housing issues. It's really sort of the point of the Olympics. When a city brings the Olympics, it's the housing developers who want to build more, luxury apartments or luxury hotels who come in and say, we want the Olympics here. And then it's also police who want to get more funding for their projects or who want to increase their police presence, or there's going to be 30% more police officers hired for the upcoming Olympics, as the LAPD has confessed. So it's really less about the Olympics is less of a sporting event and more of a excuse to bring in more hotel developers at the end of the day.
Somebody asked me this weekend about the Olympics coming to LA, and was I excited? I said, excited? Are you crazy? If I wasn't a sports writer, I would get the heck out of here. I don't want to be anywhere near this place during the Olympics, though. But because I'm a sports writer, I will. And Gia, I'm curious, you personally, how did you come to this work, and why are you personally so vested in it?
Yeah, I actually, I'd read Siren. I understood the impacts of the Olympics on a kind of global scale, just like in, via like classes in college, but hadn't really thought about the specifics or the work or how that works. And I happened to meet Johnny, who is one of the co-chairs of No Olympics, who really took it out of DSA, or Democratic Socialists of America, with a few people and really grew the org. And he told me a little bit about it. And once I started reading more and more and more, I came to understand just how duplicitous and dirty this whole thing is. I was born and raised here and, am going to be a perpetual renter, and that this, it's hard enough to afford housing as it is. Like, Los Angeles is in a deep housing crisis, and coming to see something like what's going on with SoFi, which is sort of a cornerstone of bringing the Olympics here, and the gentrification that's happening in Inglewood and what's happening to the longtime tenants there feels like a very dark sort of foreshadowing of what's going to happen throughout the city when, and it is already happening throughout the city. But it is the most expensive stadium ever built in history in a very working class city. And that in itself should not exist. The city has been like neglected. The state had to take the school over in 2012 because it was so badly mismanaged. And then all of a sudden, Mayor Butts, their mayor, because Inglewood is a city within LA County, so they have their own mayor and their own city council, is suddenly welcoming this multi-billion dollar stadium project and not really considering anything, as far as like what, or maybe he is, but maybe that's exactly why he's doing it. But what the outcome of not just the stadium, which, okay, took, you know, took over this empty lot, but everything that will happen surrounding the stadium, what that means as far as like building development, like new restaurants, new hotels, new luxury apartments, and what that means again for the long-term tenants. And right now there are, there's work being done with local tenants unions and Olympics, trying to fight landlords who are essentially abusing their tenants so much that they have to leave so they can sell that property to developers. Rents have doubled essentially in Inglewood.
One of the arguments, and this is what you just explained, has been happening in Los Angeles since I moved here 25 years ago. It just gets kind of worse and worse. One of the arguments for the Olympics or for SoFi Stadium or for the Super Bowl is it's going to bring so much money into the economy that the stadium is going to apply full-time and seasonal jobs. Then you're going to have hotels, which will also employ people, that it brings jobs and more money that can be invested in the community. What do you say about that, Gigi? Do you have a perspective on that?
Yeah, I do. It's a lie. That's the short answer. It's a dirty lie. But the long answer is that, first of all, Los Angeles actually has had the only really two Olympics that have been quote unquote profitable. Most cities lose money on the Olympics. But what most people don't know about the 84 Olympics, which did ostensibly make money, is that all of that money went into an organization called the LA 84 Foundation, which it was supposed to then take that money and invest it into kids' sports. And there have been some like swimming lessons and, you know, handing out basketballs and that sort of thing. But a lot of that money has actually been invested into a company called Blackstone, which is a real estate developer here in Los Angeles. And so all of those profits that were made were just reinvested into, you know, shady real estate companies. And it's all part of this LA 84 Foundation that's not really accountable to the people of Los Angeles. It's not really accountable to anybody. So the profits that were made weren't really enjoyed by the people of Los Angeles. And is it really even worth profiting if the, you know, making a little bit of money if all of the bad effects of the Olympics came in? There were a lot of people that were arrested and put in prison, and a lot of people who were forced from their homes for the 84 Olympics. Basically you could draw a straight line between the 84 Olympics and the 92 uprising, the kind of aggressive policing tactics that eventually culminated in the beating of Rodney King were, you know, done for the Olympics in order to clean the streets, as they called it, take out people who they said were gang members, but in many cases were just sort of teenagers who were hanging out, so that the city would look clean and not infested with gang members for wealthy tourists who were coming in from out of town. So it was just a lot of, you know, throwing innocent people in jail so that people from other cities and other places around the globe wouldn't feel scared. And the only reason they would have felt scared is because the police were telling everybody that these people were criminal when they weren't. So it was really like a gross feedback loop. And as for the jobs, a lot of the jobs are very temporary. The structures that are put in place, like the big stadiums, the stadiums don't really stay. They might be there for a little bit, like, and have some games, like, and I know in Los Angeles, actually, we aren't building stadiums for this one. So it's not like they need more people to staff those stadiums. The building that is being put in place, they're building like luxury housing. They're not really, I mean, we could build other things with those builders. And most analysis show that the job increases aren't permanent. They're temporary jobs. They're not jobs that are going to give people like money to live in a dignified way. And so the jobs that are being brought aren't good jobs and they aren't permanent. So
let me just add to that, as far as the stadiums being built, once Inglewood finished SoFi, and one beyond bringing jobs, if you're bringing, you know, even however many thousand minimum wage jobs with probably no union and no benefits. Does that really afford locals the ability to pay rent that has now doubled? And I'm going to just say no. Beyond that, like now that SoFi exists, the local government in Inglewood also okayed the basketball and entertainment, the Inglewood Basketball and Entertainment Center, which was proposed and brought about by Steve Ballmer, who is a multi-billionaire who owns the Clippers. And this is going to be the Clippers stadium, essentially. And if you like, think about a city radically and rapidly changing for the worse for the long-time working residents, like let's make Inglewood the new downtown LA, and make, you know, like when are the $1 million apartments going to start popping up? And that's right now. So the stadiums come, they're built, and then they build everything alongside them.
And the people who are bringing the Olympics, sort of like you were saying, the people who are bringing those massive stadiums, the two biggest drivers of the upcoming Olympics in 28 are these guys, Casey Wasserman, and our mayor, Eric Garcetti. Actually, Eric Garcetti's first action in office wasn't looking into our homeless problem as, you know, the problem with housing that we have right now. It was writing a letter to the IOC and starting to campaign for the Olympics here in Los Angeles. And so that's really been his like day one priority, is bringing the Olympics here with his friend Casey Wasserman, who's also involved with all this real estate development. He's, you know, old Hollywood royalty. It's really not, it's not like the public wants the Olympics. It's a bunch of really just sort of random billionaires who have decided that this is what they want, not what the people want.
There is no vote I have ever cast that I regretted more than my vote, whatever, 6-8 years ago for Eric Garcetti. That man has no interest in helping the people. He is truly in the pockets of the developers. And I sat on my neighborhood council for a couple of years, and that is literally my number one vote regret I've ever cast, is voting for that man. So, and I don't make any, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know how I feel. But anyhow, let's set.
And also, aside. I mean, it's, you know, like when he was running, he was I think we didn't quite realize what exactly he was up to. I think there was, you know. You don't have to feel that bad about it now, but I do think we all have to work against, you know, feeling that regret. And I get it, because I know many people actually who voted for Garcetti who now think he is the biggest crook and the biggest criminal around, who are actively working, you know, to abolish the Olympics, which is his pet project.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Kind of leave just LA aside for a minute. What really grabbed my attention from your group was some of the things that were on Instagram back in June during Pride Month. And I'm gay. I've always looked at the Olympic Games as, actually not always, but certainly over the last 10, 12 years, as a real beacon of hope in the sports world for the LGBTQ community. You guys, the No Olympics said that the Olympics are, quote, specifically and actively dangerous for LGBTQ people, and you accused them of pinkwashing. Tell me all about that.
To start off, just looking at some of the places, I mean, you'll the most obvious one is, of course, Sochi. That Olympics was held, even though Russia has a horrible record towards LGBT rights. There were people being put in prison at the time for being gay and for speaking out about it. But even if we're speaking about here in America and here, just to go back to LA for a minute, the people who are on who are homeless right now and who are being arrested by the police are disproportionately queer. Actually, before, you know, in the 90s, it kind of became the or early 2000s, the big like central issue to the LGBT movement kind of became gay marriage. But before that, it was always policing, because the police have been physically trying to enforce heterosexuality for years. And it's still a big issue. It's not always as visible if you're white and if you're relatively wealthy, because the police have in some ways not targeted wealthy and white queer people, especially gay people, as much. But the police disproportionately kill and disproportionately imprison, especially trans women, especially trans women of color, but really all gay people and all gender nonconforming people of color are targets for the police. And so any sport that, or any mega event like the Olympics that is going to come in and terrorize a vulnerable community, like the queer community in Los Angeles, like the queer community in London, the one in Russia, anywhere in the world, that's, you can't just stick a pride flag on it and hope for the best and say, we're doing great. That's not the reality of the situation. And even if you look at not just the effects of the Olympics, but the sport itself. I mean, they're right now targeting gender nonconforming athletes, athletes who don't conform to like Western beauty standards of being a woman, and saying that you can't compete because you have too much testosterone. Like that kind of stuff is, you know, you can't then say that and then say, oh, but we support LGBT athletes. You can't, you know, try and ban like trans athletes from the Olympics and then stick a pink flag or a rainbow flag on it. That's not something that can, just because there are more visible gay and trans and LGBT athletes in the Olympics, doesn't mean that that just doesn't really mean anything to me in a way.
Let me just share a couple of thoughts about what you said, Gigi, and then Gigi, you can jump in with whatever you want. First of all, it's not the Olympics that are targeting Caster Semenya, which I think is awful. I think that what's going on, what she is having to endure simply to defend her gold medal. And right now, in case for those of you who don't know, as far as we can tell, because, you know, medical records aren't shared, which they shouldn't be, Caster Semenya is a South African runner. She is a two-time Olympic gold medalist. She may or may not be intersex. And her testosterone levels naturally may be high, and the IAAF, which is the International Track and Field governing body, has essentially specifically targeted her for exclusion from the games. She's also LGBTQ. She has a same-sex partner. So that's what Gigi was talking about. What's going on there is from the International Track and Field Organization. So it's not like the IOC is targeting them. When the IOC has come out with policies, particularly transgender policies, they have led the world in building inclusion for trans athletes. And it is because of the IOC back in 2002 and then I think 2015 or 16. And these policies aren't perfect, but it's because of those policies that so many trans athletes have been able to compete. So I understand what you're saying about, you know, Caster Semenya, and it deserves criticism. I just don't go to the point where, oh, the Olympics need to be torn down, because I've seen a lot of good, in particular, the inclusion of trans athletes. So Gia, anything to share, anything that you want about that and anything that Gigi said?
Well, the second part of your question really was questioning our accusation or the accusation of the Olympics being, you know, if you want to call them pink washers. And to me, that's just absolutely obvious in a lot of ways. And I think, like, you know, if I think we can you know, we've all seen the pink washing that takes place over Pride Month, when a company like, I remember seeing Douglas Elliman making these like ads, I like a couple years ago, it was just all over. I was living in New York, and that's like the big real estate company there, and they were all over. When I knew that the CEO of Douglas Elliman was one of the biggest donor, like Trump donors, and obviously, or when people talk about Chick-fil-A or whatever, who maybe doesn't necessarily, you know, advertise strongly about these things, but why are we, you know, boycotting Chick-fil-A and not every other company that claims allyship during Pride Month, but is actively working to fund the people who Chick-fil-A just, you know, is more forward about funding. If we want to talk about genocides, like when the IOC, again, like Sochi, like what was happening in 2013 there was absolutely, absolutely abuse and violence towards LGBTQ people. The Sochi mayor claimed that there were no gay people in his city. They were disappearing activists. And when the IOC was asked to talk about it, they essentially said, like, no, you know, not our, like, we're not a political organization. And to me, like, how can funding, you know, working for developers that are, again, displacing LGBTQ youth daily, like imprisoning them, like bringing police, and that, like, that to me is as much violence on an LGBTQ community than anything can be. And then what, there's allyship because a few athletes, you know, can claim that they've gotten, you know, they've gotten the they've been treated better. Like, you know, the Olympic Charter works, you know, maybe to defend Olympic athletes, but what about the LGBTQ people in the city that the Olympics arrive at? And like, I can't, as a queer person and obviously an ally, like, claim that the IOC does anything good for queer people just because they're doing good for queer athletes. And like, the biggest, you know, case when we talk about, like, Gigi brought up, like, cleaning up the city and what that means, and that, like, was like almost like quite literally echoed by Donald Trump, who came to the city, to LA, in February of this year, and said we have to clean up our cities, we have to clean up the city in preparation for the Olympics. And he sat alongside Casey Wasserman, and, you know, they essentially claimed to be a team working to bring the Olympics here. So, you know, the faces of the Olympics and the people working, you know, like working to bring the Olympics to any city are certainly not helping. And to me, I would say are perpetuating violence on LGBTQ communities around the world. And so just because, you know, there are a few faces that say, oh yeah, like, you know, like the Olympics supported me, does not mean much.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the question is our entertainment worth the lives of people? And to me, no, there's no world in which my entertainment is worth the lives of other people. And just because you know, get a few athletes who are queer on board to help sell the entertainment, that to me is not a good, because you're doing it on the lives of other people.
One of the things that, and again, I so appreciate this conversation, you know, it's given me a lot of opportunity to think and reflect. One of the things I'm becoming present with is how much I love the Olympics and how much I do and have for a long time disliked the IOC. The IOC, International Olympic Committee, hiding behind this absolutely false narrative that it is apolitical or it's not there to advance human rights is it's just patently false. They have 4 human rights violations in the past, banned countries like South Africa and Afghanistan, and then on other issues like LGBTQ inclusion in Sochi, heading to, I just wrote 2 weeks ago about how they are just shirking their duties, heading to back to Beijing just 14 years after Beijing last hosted the Olympics. And one of the things that I talked about in that article was another dirty little secret, that there are very few countries that can actually put on an Olympics. It would be wonderful if countries like Norway or some of these places where there is more inclusion, there are more human rights, could host these things. But unfortunately, we're going to keep ending up in Asia and Russia, because they are dictatorships. They can go bulldoze tenements if they want to put up a stadium. And unfortunately, that's the way the Olympics are built right now. That's half of the countries who can host an Olympic Games, according to what the IOC needs. So I love the Olympics. I love what it stands for. I love the visibility that it has given LGBTQ athletes. I think that has been, I mean, Adam Rippon's performance, I understand white, cisgender male, but the performance he gave at the Winter Olympics, that moved the needle on our acceptance. And so I love that part of it, but you're absolutely right. The IOC is a mess.
And I mean, I would just say the IOC and the Olympics, I would say this is the No Olympics LA stance, is the IOC and the Olympics are synonymous because they are the driving force. The Olympics, you know, capital T, capital O, like whatever you want to, you know, however you want to look at it, like, are just the shiny, you know, the shiny carrot, you know, to distract from everything else. And these conversations, like, yeah, like that performance was absolutely, I understand, you know, move the needle, but at what cost? And if you're, you know, we're talking about, you know, how, where the Olympics can take place, and like, look, like it's happening here in our city. And so what does that mean both about like what's allowed in the city and who's being affected? If like, yeah, right, like in Russia and in Beijing, like the amount of violence that can occur there without much, I know, like any kind of like any system of checks and balances is obscene. But is that not happening here? If our city can host it, is it not? Or what are we doing? Like there must be some equivalent, and I would argue there is. And I can, and I feel like I've already said it, but we can say it again.
Well, one difference is, I think one of you mentioned that LA is not going to be building a ton of stadiums. That is one difference. But I take what you say. You make a great point.
I'd actually argue that that's not a difference, because we did build one stadium for the Olympics. The SoFi Stadium was built greenlit as a recruiting tool for the Olympics. And the stadiums are also very little of the building that's done for the Olympics. Most of the building that's done are the hotels that are being built. And so I would say that the way that housing is shifted from the people who live and work in the city to the people who are visiting the city and tourists, that housing stock that shifts in that way is probably a bigger part of the building for the Olympics than the stadiums. So the stadiums have actually a very small effect on, like, when you think of Olympic building projects, it's less the state, people think of the stadiums, it's really more about the hotels. And that's really the biggest driver. So I think then that brings up the question, why do the Olympics exist if it's not to, because it seems like the Olympics kind of just exists to build more hotels, because that's what's really being built for the Olympics. So I would argue that that's actually not a significant difference.
Well, and I would disagree. When you look at London, Rio, for the Winter Olympics, I think you're probably right. I think there's probably not a lot of major sports facilities being built. And when you look at Athens, there were many, many buildings.
Oh, built. No, they are. But what I'm saying is that the hotels usually aren't counted the same way. And they aren't, because it's not a centralized project. It's a more decentralized project. I'm not saying that the sporting facilities aren't a problem. I'm just saying that there is just as much there's just as much building for the Los Angeles Olympics. And there is also the building that we are doing is causing horrific problems around the city. It's just that we've gotten better at hiding what kind of building we're doing. We're doing it quieter.
Exactly. I think there's we can divide this in some way as like the displacement caused by, say, building an Olympic Village that that has occurred in cities around the world, obviously Rio being the most popular example of that, but it's everywhere. For one thing, the LA being a no-build Olympics, like, let's put that in quotation marks, because that's a myth. And not only that, it's like an active lie being used and thrown out by Garcetti. No-build means take up space, change what's there, and then rebuild whatever you want after the Olympics go. It's a way of kind of LA taking up what they need and using it, quote unquote, temporarily, but leaving it vulnerable after the games are gone. And then beyond that, there is the absolute fact of the permanent builds, which are the hotels, which is the tourist economy. And that, like Gigi said, that's going to be affecting our city years and years and years beyond just the debt that we're going to be paying off for probably, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. It's going to be a $10 billion debt plus.
Probably.
For not the hotels.
I've only got a couple more minutes. And the last thing I kind of want to hit with you is, look, the Olympic Games are participated, I think it's 180 countries. There are countless multi-million and multi-billion dollar corporations behind it. Major superstars, media companies trying to topple the Olympic Games. It's going to be tough. And my guess is going to take a long, 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 long time. In the meantime, when you look at the Olympic Games as they happen, is there anything that you point to where you say, gosh, this would be a great place for improvement? This is what I wish could change.
No, I mean, not really, because I do think that in our efforts to oppose the Olympics, we are doing things that will have positive side effects in the city, even if the games go on, because we're doing things like, we're organizing tenants and so that they can oppose being evicted. And that's the sort of thing that I think will improve. I think that the biggest harm reduction we can do are the same acts that we can do that are opposing the games, which is mobilizing the community and keeping hotels from being developed, making sure that housing is not only affordable, but that we have more public housing. So I think the things that we are doing in opposing the Olympics and in pushing the Olympics out and in making the Olympics toxic are what will be the best harm reduction for the Olympics. But I don't see any reforming of the Olympics.
The next two Olympics are Tokyo and Beijing, and then Paris. Have you made inroads in those communities and built contacts there so they can carry on some of the work that you're doing here?
Oh, definitely. There's actually in almost every city that's ever had the Olympics, there's been an Olympics resistance. One of our big slogans is No Olympics Anywhere. And so we do work with our transnational allies. We actually, the group that opposes the Tokyo Olympics is really cool. They're primarily made up of unhoused people and former unhoused people and their allies. The Paris group we talked to a lot. We actually did a really cool teach-in series this summer where we talked to our allies from around the globe, and they brought in their perspectives on the struggle. They talked about what kind of work they're doing and what issues were the biggest issues in their Olympics. And it was just a great way to talk to people from around the world and learn about all the destruction that the Olympics have brought worldwide. We actually went to Tokyo last year for the first ever Olympics opposition conference, which was a really cool trip for the people who went on it. So we've been building really strong allies with people around the world because it's a global event. That's the only way that we'll be able to eliminate it.
Well, Gia, thank you so much for joining me. You're giving me stuff to think about, and I really appreciate the work you're doing, particularly in LA. Like I said, I did not support LA's bid for the Olympics, and if we can reduce the harm that it does to poor communities and communities of color, obviously LGBTQ people. Stay in touch, you know, add me to your mailing list. I want to see how we can help do that.
Thanks for letting us come on the show.
Yeah, we can radicalize you, Sid. You can be the old.
Oh, they've been trying for a long time.
There are other ways to center athletes. Like we are always fans of athletes.
Yeah,
including fair pay.
The Olympics don't pay their athletes at all, really. The only way you get paid
athletes is athletes also end up on those lists after the games because they've spent so much money even trying to get there.
If there's a plan to be considered, I'm all for it. So again, thank you both very much, and do stay in touch.
Thanks, Sid.
Since I chatted with Gigi and Gia, I have been thinking about that kind of revelation that I had about the love for the Olympics and a distaste for the International Olympic Committee. And I have more faith that this event can be transformed. I think it's going to have to be. You can't have an event where only a small handful of countries have the ability to host it. And I hope that the Nolympics folks are successful in making change, but I don't hope the Olympics go away. I'm open to Gigi and Gia continuing to try to make me a radical on this issue, but gosh, I love the Olympics, and I do think that there is a lot of good that comes out of them, even if there's bad as well. Anyhow, thanks for listening. Next week, I'm going to have an athlete in Paralympic sports on to talk, and I'm really excited for that conversation. So come on back next week, and we will see you then.